Hey, everybody, welcome back to Sex, Drugs, and the Epigenome. And I'm back with our friendly face, Dr. Seeds. My goodness, it's been quite a break that we've had in between our last episodes, but you have been so busy with all kinds of things. You finished the Senescence Summit, and that took a lot of preparation and was clearly based upon the feedback that we received from all of the physicians that were there, your best work yet, in addition to the speakers that you invited to come and teach there. Oh man, Doc, it's been, our last episode was 3 months ago and we have a lot to catch up on.
Yeah, we did traveled a bit. We were in New York. We were in California. We were in Portugal. Yeah, so New York. Yeah, so we had quite a bit of stuff we had to get done there, and on top of the mastermind. So,
in addition to all the teaching that you do, you also teach at other events as well. And this Portugal trip was at the Cell Symposia in Lisbon. Saw the photos with your team out there. I wasn't able to make it, but it was fantastic to see. And I love what you said about how Joss had described it. Joss, who's Dr. Seeds' lovely wife, how she describes it makes me giggle, but I can only imagine how much it was kind of in your element. It was Dr. Seeds with his peeps is the best way I can describe it.
She said it's going to science fair, like sending the kids to science fair. It's like, have fun at science fair.
Hopefully next time Joss will make it to one of your science fairs and see you in action. That'll be a fun time.
She would be off shopping and doing other things. She wouldn't be spending time at the science fair.
Now you're leaning into the science fair thing, which is a very good thing. I like that. That's what we're going to call it now. All right. Well, we have so many announcements to make at the end of this episode, but we will not hold up any longer. This episode is one that I've been doing quite a bit of research on to prepare so that we can get all of Dr. Seeds' brain and really use him as our shining light when it comes to this information around stem cells. There's quite a bit of information on it, but what can you decipher from what is true, what is science, and what is purely anecdotal slash maybe even false? So that's what we're dedicating this episode to, is all about the stem cells and stem cell therapy and how it differs from other types of similar therapeutics that it's used in conjunction with. So lots of fun topics. Dr. Seeds will be talking, spending some time on some common stem cell treatments, as well as some uncommon ones that you may not have heard of. But before we do, I would like to just give us our medical disclaimer. Everything that you hear and see today is all for informational purposes only. Please always consult with your physician before moving forward with anything that we discuss today. That said, Dr. Seeds, I've heard you say this on multiple occasions, and I've written it down as I need to ask him about this. And it's that I've heard you say that the stem cells are the ultimate cell signaling agents, which is a big thing because you are the pioneer of peptide therapy, which is a cell signaling agent. So I'd like to kind of start there. What makes it the ultimate cell signaling agent, and how does it differ from peptides?
Well, I think we have to just look at stem cells as they are a repair mechanism, really, of the body, that if anything goes wrong, stem cells are involved in contributing to the repair and restoration of normal function of metabolism or of these mechanistic pathways that we describe in disease states and in metabolism. Without stem cells that are, and what everybody should know is that there are these stem cells that exist are located in many areas of the body, in organs, and they're in the liver, they're in the kidney, they're in the brain, they're in around they're around endothelial cells in vessels, so they can repair vessels when there's injury, or for instance, when there's atherosclerosis that's developing, you have stem cells there that are trying to correct mechanisms and repair. You have stem cells that are in muscle. You need stem cells to restore after working out, that the breakdown of muscle and restoring muscle and rebuilding muscle, because that's what happens in any type of exercise activity, specifically resistance exercise, when you definitely break down muscle and you're rebuilding. So stem cells are a vital part of all of these functions. And even more importantly, stem cells are significantly involved in immune regulation and immune function. And I don't think that's emphasized enough, because they are very significant in setting the environment for they actually contribute to other type of stem cell regulation in specifically in the brain. And I might get into that here a little bit later. So stem cells play a significant role in cell signaling to assist in setting the right, the immune tolerance that's needed in the body, in the gut, in setting the immune regulation, so there's a balance. And stem cells are very specific as being important in, as I said, in repair and recovery of muscle injury, and then of really basically any tissue injury that occurs in the body. So I think, and they have the potential. So a lot of it is cell signaling, but they also have the potential of turning, of changing into the cell that is needed to become, that is the damaged cell or in repairing itself. The stem cells control or have a great influence on cell senescence, which we just got done. We just finished the mastermind on senescence and really kind of introduced some new concepts and some really interesting modulating agents that can have a significant influence on stem cells, specifically in the bone, in controlling osteoporosis. And we talked about that, and maybe we'll bring that up again here. But my gosh, you know, there's just so much to understanding this cell signaling issues. And I think what people concept we should try to understand today, in today's environment, when people are using stem cells, most of the in the translational services that are done by physicians using stem cells presently to try to assist in care for arthritic diseases or other inflammatory or autoimmune issues and certain type of neurodegenerative issues. For the most part, please do not have the misconception that those stem cells are turning into other cells like chondrocytes in the knee or any other type of cell wherever they're being utilized, because right now in their infancy of how we're utilizing these cells, very few of them are turning into another type of cell. They're actually just communicating information. And most importantly, they're communicating information that is more specific to immune regulation. And I can get into that in a little bit, but the real take home message of, I think I'd love everybody to walk away from here today, is understanding that unless we have a very specific situation where we can like scaffold these stem cells or hold them in a specific place for a period of time, or influence them with other signaling agents to induce a change in that, let's say that mesenchymal stem cell, they're not converting into other cells. They're actually signaling out specific cytokines and chemokines and proteases or specific factors, growth factors, that are relevant to a injury situation or an immune situation where there's an increase in inflammatory versus anti-inflammatory processes. That's what this stem cell is doing presently. Now we're working on ways to convert these stem cells into other cells. And there are ways to do that, but they're in very isolated circumstances. And then there's this idea of how actually stem cells, depending on the environment they're in, they can induce, say, like a neuronal stem cell to potentially differentiate into like an astrocyte or an oligodendrocyte or a neuronal cell. So in those instances, we can, a mesenchymal stem cell could have an influence in pushing that pathway. And the same thing in injury. So the stem cell is like signaling the stem cells that you have into potentially turning and transforming where a stem cell has to first expand and then it differentiates. And then it has to self-renew also. So there's a lot of little nuances here that I think people get very confused with, and they think that, gosh, you know, I'm going to have this stem. I'm looking at this potential stem cell process, and they think that they're going to be converting these stem cells into something. And it's just so ridiculous when I see this I see people throwing up X-rays that have no business doing this and showing pictures of where they're trying to convince people that they've grown new cartilage because they've just injected stem cells into their knee. And that's just complete baloney. It does not happen. And if anything, there's very, very few conversions to improve chondrocytes. But what you're doing is you're in an arthritic situation, you're changing the environment of the joint, let's say. So let's just take this example, and then I'll let you, I know I'm talking a little too much here, but I think this is important to understand. Let's take an arthritic joint and someone who's going to have a stem cell injection done, or what we might say is a BMAC type of injection, which is bone marrow concentrate, which is basically where you aspirate the bone marrow, and then you spin that down into a collection of mesenchymal stem cells from the bone marrow. So you're pulling out those out of the bone marrow. It's a bone marrow concentrate that is basically what you're using that has mesenchymal stem cells in them. And you're relying on those stem cells to signal in a joint space, anti-inflammatory type of signaling agents that will change the environment of an arthritic knee, which is basically controlled by senescence in the knee. And depending on what part of that knee went wrong, was it the synovial cells? Was it the fat pad? Was it the chondrocytes that are creating the senescence type of signaling, or has it been an autoimmune type of inflammatory process that's going on that started in the gut? Any of those, anyways, what you're doing is you're trying to improve the environment to take away that pro-inflammatory environment so that the knee can continue to function in a better environment. What I'd like to say is you could take an X-ray, let's say, of a person that looks like they have minimal joint space. And you can find plenty of people that have that type of scenario that are walking around perfectly fine without complaints. And then you find the people that have those problems that come to your office who have a changed environment. And it is why you can change the environment to improve mobility and activity. And you've seen that with multiple patients we've talked to and discussed, and people that we've been able to help specific to Dr. Will's wife, you know, who was contemplating surgery, who took all the necessary steps, who had basically bone on bone contact, but we did things to change the environment. And so that's the key, is giving the patients the proper expectation of what you're doing with these stem cells, and then educating them as to what the potential is for them. But I really just wanted to make that clear, that it's very difficult for those cells to convert into another cell unless you're using other type of agents to convert that cell. And that has to do more with BMP type of bone morphogenic proteins and other agents to change cells, some type of stem cells into other cells. And that's a whole nother discussion than what we'll talk about here today. But I think it's just a good introductory way to make sure everybody really understands that messaging. And that's what I think is so important for this process to move forward and to continue to be of a benefit to everyone, that as we're learning there, I think there's been significant strides in understanding how important these mesenchymal type of stem cells can be, specifically from bone marrow, that are having an incredible influence on improving the environment. And whether that's for neurological issues or immune issues, infectious issues, or metabolic issues, or, you know, just plain arthritic issues that are probably the most commonly used right now. It's just incredible once you can dive into that. And then I think from the molecular side of medicine, our approach has been in looking at, okay, we know what they're capable of doing. We know what their function is. The key to working with these cells is to make them the best they can be when they're going to be utilized. And there's a lot to be said about that. Because you're utilizing your stem cells and ultimately making those stem cells the best they can be in signaling the other cells that need to be utilized for whatever mechanism or process we're focused on in improving the health of the patient. So the key really is, from the molecular side of what we do in molecular medicine, is preparing that patient appropriately for the stem cell procedure. If they're contemplating looking at that process or making those stem cells in their body work better for them, by working out all the things we've discussed. And that's the first step is, well, gosh, if you can't make the stem cells in your body, you can't make those work better at what they're supposed to be doing. And that's really what, to control cell senescence and improve to enable them to control senescence, but to also to allow them to repopulate and to proliferate and to differentiate when they need to. And then they're the ultimate cell. Well, if we're not doing anything to improve that, then what makes you think we can just take stem cells from somewhere else and put them somewhere and they're going to do their job well? Well, you might get some initial benefit, and most of the time you're not going to get much at all, because you've done nothing to improve the environment for those stem cells to work in. And that's where I believe the biggest problem is that we're not paying attention to that, or we're paying too much attention to trying to take these stem cells, work with them, culture them, and make a lot of them because we think more of them will be better. I think that's the wrong concept also. I think the message is in the middle, where the stem cell has to be ultimate in doing its job. And we just have to remember, when we remove a stem cell or when a stem cell goes to work, let's say, in your body to work on a repair or a mechanism where it's needed, it all of a sudden goes from a very nice environment to an environment that's harsh, because pH has changed. There are other factors, cytokines, chemokines, proteases that are harsh in affect how that stem cell potentially can work. So the stem cell has to work in tough environments, which people I don't think realize. And that, so that stem cell has to be really ready to go. So all those things you got to consider when you're looking at this process of utilizing something that can make a big difference. And most of the time you're going to get, I think most of the time we're significantly underutilizing the potential because we're not recognizing those factors. And the factor is you got to get the patient right. You got to get those factors right before you can ultimately get the most out of the potential of doing something like that. That was a long-winded introduction to what you just started with.
It's a big topic, Doc. And you said some so many things I have so many questions on, but I want to start with the first one. And I've heard you say this to other people and patients, and it's worth repeating because I had no idea this was the case, but you talked about, you know, your own stem cells having to be in the right state to do the right things. And then I've heard you say, you know, your stem cells are favorable toward over synthetic things or things that are come from other places, other types of stem cells that are not autologous to your body, right? All those things I've heard you kind of say. And I'd love to kind of hear more about that, how it is your stuff and that's what you like to work with. Can you expand on that a bit?
Well, I think the best way to start that conversation is right now we're still in such an investigative area of looking at stem cells. Okay, so if we use stem cells from, let's say, that come from the placenta, a lot of stem cell utilization out there comes from or potentially has come from placental type of stem cells that are supposed to be more non immunogenic, where they can be used everywhere. And there's still some controversy about that. There are no standardizations out there either. Everybody I think is trying to make excellent efforts in making this process as secure and and following all of the regulations that need to be followed to make this the best product it can be. But I think we're still in the infancies of all of these processes of working across the board with cells such as that are not your cell. And I think it's just in this time frame, our stem cells are the best thing we have to work with because we know the most about them. We know there's no risk of an immune issue. And we have the best capability of making those work their best for you because of so many aspects of what we're understanding of what these cells are capable of doing. And it just keeps increasing. The knowledge and the literature just is exploding right now. So that's not to say that these other, you know, creating other stem cells from and culturing them from like the gingiva or from epithelial cells that we can actually convert. We can undifferentiate them and make them and bring them back into a stem cell situation. And there's a lot of great research that's going on. But right now, today, in what we have to utilize, where are we as far as being able to be the most, I think, the most comfortable and moving forward with utilizing what I think it has the most benefit without harm? In my question, it's without question. It is it is your stem cell that is that has to be utilized at the same time that it's harvested, instead of working on culturing it and changing it. And because then all these other factors then are in, and you just can't have too many steps like that, I believe. And again, this is an opinion, and this is why there's a lot of great discussion out there. But today, in this environment, in utilization of stem cells, in considering if you're working on, depending on what the process is, this is utilization of your own, specifically your bone marrow stem cells, is where we have the most research that's been produced because of all the things that we've done with cancers and leukemia, specifically the hematological cancers. We have a significant amount of literature on this. And so we're just, again, basing this on past use and procedures that we've become pretty good at doing, and especially as far as harvesting and then understanding that you've got to follow those policies and procedures to the T. And I think that's important right now. But it's great talking about all the new research that's occurring and looking at placental type of stem cells and cord blood stem cells, and more significantly, I think these epithelial cells that we can convert back into any cell we want, basically, and then use BMPs to convert them again. So that's where the real process is taking us, I think, down the road with being able to convert stem cells into what we want, which is just going to be tremendous. So I hope that clears it up a little bit.
It does. It absolutely does. And you say this to me all the time, but you're always about what is in the data. And this answer proves you just care about the data. And that's what you're basing your care off of, which is fantastic. Doc, I'm going to switch gears a little bit, and only because we're running a little bit out of time. We know about some of the common uses of stem cells. I just did a quick Google search, and they're researched in transplants, tissue regeneration. You touched upon those things, brain treatments. You can read all about that. The uncommon ones are the ones that I want to discuss in the remainder of the time that we have. And that is, I don't know if you recall this, but last year we had one of our patients send us this article from the Wall Street Journal. And this was, it was published last year, I want to say November. And the title is "A Knee or Hip Replacement Without Surgery on the Horizon." And what's funny is we opened it up and we're reading about it, and it's all about taking the stem cells from your existing bone marrow and injecting them in, spinning it down and injecting it into the bone space. And you've been doing that for, gosh, has it been a decade, Doc? Is that correct?
More than that, probably, yeah.
So on the horizon in last year's article, but this has been something that you've utilized quite a bit with your patients.
Well, yeah, and I think again, what has to be, when we can get to where we can, when I say scaffold, that means hold stem cells in a particular place where there may be cartilage defects and hold them in place, and then use growth factors that will convert that stem cell into a chondrocyte, which right now we do know of some of these bone morphogenic proteins that we can utilize that are FDA approved that can convert cells into chondrocytes. So we have the processes that are available to potentially start doing this. It's just, we're not quite there. We've got these hydrogels that can potentially hold stem cells in place. We're getting very close to it. And there actually are some, there are definitely some clinical, there are some clinical studies right now that are focusing on that. Cool. But we're not there where we can say that we're replacing joints. And that's the biggest, that's the number one communication you need to have with your patient, is saying, look, I'm not, will a joint replacement be inevitable at some point? The possibility is yes, it is. I'm here to bridge that gap, to potentially give you more time. And in quite a significant amount of cases, if you do this right, you could buy these patients many years of relief before they have to jump into something that can be a significant procedure, but definitely can improve their life. And we have great data on survivorship of joint replacements and their improvement in lifestyle, more specifically hips, over knees, and then shoulders, and then ankles and elbows and so forth. But it's all, again, it's just having that armamentarium for the patient to choose from to give them better decision-making. And I think that if we're more responsible in giving the correct message, we're going to be so much more effective in helping patients. And I do think that is I've been very, very pleased with what I've been able to see and how I've been able to buy patients a significant amount of time. I saw probably two or three people today in the office that I've seen in the past that I've done some stem cell procedures for, that I've delayed their surgery 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And again, they're all different presentations, and let me be straightforward and tell you there. And then there are some patients that you do this treatment for and it doesn't improve their, it doesn't change their course of pain and problems. Why are there those people? It's because they've reached the end stage and you can't change the environment. Very difficult to do. The environment is so, there's so much senescence. There's so much more that you need to do with some of these patients. But I will tell you, the more leeway you have to work with them before in changing that environment, the percentage of improvement increases significantly. And in fact, that's something we're working on in you and I and the team are working on for our next big stem cell meeting that's coming up, that we hope to present our data on that. So, which I think is significant in what we've been able to do in improving and giving people realistic outcomes and expectations. But along, what goes with that is not just doing that, it's getting them back to activities that are controllable, because exercise and nutrition, they truly make changes and real differences in these procedures. Just like what we talked about, what people don't realize, like simple supplements, like the one that we discussed in a very key supplement that we discussed in the senescence talk, about how simple something like this controls histone methylation. And histone methylation is the key to why these mesenchymal stem cells lose their effectiveness in bone marrow. And so if you know the things to improve this histone methylation, and that's all about Jumanji demethylation processes of these mesenchymal stem cells. If you can improve that just with a simple supplement, and on top of understanding all these other mechanisms that we work with, you can really make some changes. And that's what's just, I think that's incredible, right? That's incredible. So there's so much more, I think, more education people need in really understanding. My honest opinion here too is I think there's too many people using stem cells that have no idea what the process is in why they're effective or how they're effective. And they're just more involved in the process and procedures and haven't done enough to, I think, learn about more about it. And I see that. I do believe that is an issue. So that's why we're out here trying to educate. Yeah.
I mean, you hear about patients coming to you that have done all kinds of things to their joints, and you're one of your favorite lines that I repeat for the patients coming in is that those are sacred spaces and you better have a strategy. You better know what you're doing in there, rather than just let's try, like, for example, PRP shot and let's see what happens. And that's something that you do not condone.
There's been over 100,000 articles written on PRP, and the data is still equivocal. You got good papers, bad papers that tell you yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. Over 100,000 papers, 100,000. How much more do we have to keep writing about PRP? PRP, or plasma-rich protein, is a platelet-rich protein, is a it's a signaling agent. That is, platelets are very important in signaling, cell signaling. And using PRP in combination with stem cells is a whole different avenue. And that's I think where you see a lot of the research is migrated, and understanding that these cells communicate and they enhance. PRP enhances the cell signaling of the stem cells. That's what the PRP is trying to do in the joint. It's trying to help some of the local stem cell population in improving their utilization. I have those concerns. I can't believe some of the, I'll just say it, some of the crap people put in their, have let people put in their joints is just ridiculous. But again, it's just an opinion. But I think you have to be really, really smart and diligent when you're dealing with a joint specifically. You got to be very careful because you've got to really respect it, and you got to be careful with infection and those type of things that you don't want to introduce into a joint that can be devastating. So there's a lot that I think needs to be cleaned up in that area in being responsible for some of the crazy stuff that's being, I consider that's being done there, that is people just need to do their homework, I think. So I hope that helps a little bit. I think,
absolutely.
You know, that if I could make a statement, so a mesenchymal stem cell, it's one of its most important things it does is it has the capability of signaling something out called hepatic growth factor. And hepatic growth factor is like the key, one of these key factors involved in immune regulation. And that is significant. That is significant because that is what you're looking for this stem cell to be. It's one of its most powerful aspects is this release of hepatic growth factor. And hepatic growth factor has an influence on inflammation, angiogenesis, on proliferation of, for instance, in the brain. This is where it's going, like in neurodegenerative disease, and looking at, okay, well, where's the power in the mesenchymal stem cell, or, you know, that you're going to be giving someone or potentially getting it into their, into the CSF and into the environment of the brain. Well, its influence is the signaling of that hepatic growth factor and what it does to influence the neural stem cells that are like in the subventricular layer of the third ventricle, or in the subgranular area of the hypothalamus, of the arcuate nucleus, and those are like the stem cells of the brain that are neural stem cells that can convert into astrocytes or oligodendrocytes or neurons. For those to do that, they need signaling. And that's what this hepatic growth factor can do in that environment, is help signal that change. And they can influence synaptogenesis and myelination of axons and play a significant role there. And that's just been, that's research that's just exploding right now. But it all has made sense because we've understood these pathways. We've just never been able to validate them. And now we can validate them, that this is what the stem cell does to influence other stem cells to do their job and to not just to proliferate, to expand. They have to expand And then they can differentiate into